Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, the podcast which aims to take you behind the scenes of the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, as well as the automotive and social media worlds. I'm your host, Sam, from that YouTube channel Seen Through Glass, and alongside me it is, of course, Mr. Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, hello. Hello, everyone.
We have another guest on the podcast today.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, is it Patreon?
Well, no, actually it's not. And I don't know if we could classify her as a guest. But Twiggy, my puppy, is here in the room with us.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Quite worryingly, I have no idea where. If you're watching on the YouTube channel, you may see her appear somewhere in the back of shot, maybe doing a pee or a poo in an inappropriate place. I kind of hope not.
And it is a dog. Most people might think it's a rat, but it is a dog.
It's not a rat. She's adorable.
No, it's a lovely little dog, but it's the puppy. Size of a rat.
She's a puppy. She's growing up.
It's that size, mate.
That's a big rat, you'll see. Yeah. But you're right. We do actually have a nickname for her at our home, which is Little Rat.
Well, there you go.
She does. She does look a bit like a rat. She runs around the place. But yeah, she's currently grubbing around on the floor. She's supposed to be lying very calmly next to me on her little bed, but that's not really working out. So it's her first, like, podcast recording. We'll forgive her for being a little bit badly behaved.
She'll get in the groove.
She'll get in the groove. But yes, anyway, welcome to today's episode. As I say, if you're watching here on YouTube, hello. Make sure to subscribe, turn on notifications so you don't miss future episodes. If you're listening to us, keep listening to us on whatever audio platform you are, whether it's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever else you might be listening to us. And of course, we have to thank, you already mentioned them a little bit, Tony, our patrons.
Yes.
The best people in the world.
They're looking after us.
Well, more and more are popping up all over the place as well. It seems to be that every day, every week, we're getting new patrons joining Behind the Glass patron page and supporting us, which is fantastic, and we love it. And it's taking us to new, exciting places. That's all we're going to say for now.
Oh.
That's a teaser.
We can't say nothing.
No, can't say nothing.
And rightly so, because we are one of the top three listen to automotive podcasts.
I think we dropped a top five when we missed a few weeks.
Oh no, we were top three.
We were top three. We dropped a couple of places, but we're gonna get back. We're gonna get back on it.
Oh
yeah. Anyway, nice try. But yes, a huge shout out to our patrons. If you're interested in supporting this podcast via Patreon, go check it out. patreon.com/behindtheglass. Twiggy's just done a shit.
Oh my god. The dogs drop the kids off.
Quite literally, Twiggy has just done a poo in the corner of the room.
Do you need to pause?
I think probably I should, because it might make recording a little unenjoyable.
Oh, it stinks.
We'll be right back with you in a second. Oh, I'm back. Wow. I literally just physically ran with poo in my hand, well, wrapped up in a tissue, to the loos that are here in our studio block. Yeah, that was an interesting moment. Anyway, hello. Should we continue with our podcast? Well done, Twiggy. Now, one thing, I mean, as great as the patrons are, and patron is in general, one thing it does is it confuses me a bit, because basically all the patrons get these episodes a week before the rest of you do.
They do.
So if you're not a patron and you listen to it, actually the patrons have heard this a week ago. Which means recording is quite hard because we're sort of talking in this weird time continuum. I never know what's future, what's past. For example, our AMG GT Black Series chat felt quite dated when the rest of the public heard it, because a lot of news had come out since we recorded the episode.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to sort of do a bit of future prediction today in some of our chat to kind of date it appropriately. But let's get into it. The 911 Carrera T It's sold.
It's gone.
Hey! Tony has been the maestro once again and sold my car in 7 days. Less,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I mean, it was priced properly.
Yes.
I always had great confidence it was going to sell. I know that you wasn't as confident. And you flap anyway, so...
I flap all the time. I flap buying cars and I flap selling cars.
You just flap, yeah. But if you work in the industry, then you become more relaxed anyway, so...
And I tell you what, as a private individual trying to sell their car, one lesson I learned there was to really follow the expert's advice in the sense where you were the one that said, look, this is how we should price it. I'm happy to price it a little bit more if you want, but this is the price to sell it at. And I kind of just trusted you and said, yeah, sure, go for it. We could have tried to squeeze a little bit more money, but then we could have sat there for another 2 months waiting for it to sell.
So there's one big lesson I learned very early on in this job. Your first deal is your best deal. So take your first bid. As long as it's not stupid, you know, if you put a car up at 65 grand and someone offers you 60, I mean, it's not a thing. But your first deal's your best bill. Take the money and move on to the next one from a dealer's point of view.
Fair enough.
But the main thing is that that all comes with experience, that you price the cars properly in the first place. So I told you the options. I was dead straight. And I don't like doing sale or return, really, because I'm not really in control of it. But I don't mind doing it for people that I know and friends and stuff. But there's quite a lot of dealers that promise people the earth on sale or return, and they'll say, we'll get you this, but it's not realistic. And the reason why they do that is because it's not their money, mm-hmm. firstly.
Not their risk, not their gamble.
It's not their risk. So I kind of take it on board that it is my risk, even though it's not my car, if I'm doing sale or return, and I would price it if I was buying it, which is the right thing to do. So, and then you educate the customer. And if they don't think that that's a reasonable amount of money, then I'm sorry, give it to another dealer that won't sell it.
Well, proof is in the pudding. The car has gone, which is great. And I think is that the third or fourth car of mine that you've sold? Maybe fifth car of mine you've sold now.
Yeah, it's five or six, maybe.
Yeah, you've been churning through them. So let's wait and see what the future holds, whether you're going to be selling anything else at some point.
You've got to buy something else.
That's what I was going to say, because it won't be the 360. So let's stay
absolutely
tuned.
Not.
Absolutely not. But otherwise, let's talk about what else you've been up to, because you did call me sort of middle of last week having a bit of a rant. And do you remember? Do you remember what you were ranting about?
I mean, I call you fairly often to
mine. You do, yeah. You call me almost every day to rant. You were ranting about an i3.
Yes, I was. I was fuming as well, wasn't I? So, I'll make it brief because it's quite a long story.
Yeah. So, it's a very long story.
So basically, we took a BMW i3 into stock. The dealer that we bought it from was up in Huddersfield. So we run Golf GTDs or a van as a company car or whatever. So because of the coronavirus, we're not using public transport at the moment or sending drivers on trains. We're driving everywhere. So two of us gets in the car. We go to Huddersfield. We take a GTD Golf. We fill it up with diesel. It was 50-odd quid worth of diesel. He goes up to Huddersfield, he gets in the i3, we drives back. The i3 was fully charged at Huddersfield, 120 miles or whatever it is. We gets about 70 miles, 75 miles down the road, needs charging immediately.
You will be kaput, if we say, is that a German expression, kaput?
Kaput,
yes.
Yeah.
You will kaput unless you recharge.
Finito.
Yeah.
So the sat-nav always tells you the nearest charging points.
Which I think is good.
Very good.
I'm up for that.
Yeah, so it was always educating us as we're driving down the road and telling us the nearest charging point. So we found this charging point. Luckily, which is my first bugbear, luckily the charging points were empty.
I mean, thank God, because I actually raised this with you.
You raised it with me, and I actually thought about it after, and I'd have been fuming.
Well, because sometimes at peak rush hour, you can go to a popular petrol station. You have to wait in queue, don't you, to fill up?
For a couple of minutes.
But there you go, for a couple of minutes. Imagine a world where we all go, let's save the environment. Let's do what the government are telling us and buy EVs. And then you get to the service station, because you've got to charge up, and all the power points or plugs or whatever you want to call them, recharging stations, are full.
Correct.
And it's not going to be a couple of minutes, is it, Tony?
Absolutely not. So we got from Huddersfield, we went to Nottingham or Northampton. Nottingham. So we pulled into Nottingham. There's two charge points, fast charge points. He pulls up. We'd never done it before. Download an app. Scan the app. Didn't work. Then tried again.
It's like early pay for parking in central London.
Yes. That's exactly. And you've put all this information in. And then it starts charging. Fine. We're going to have some lunch. It was about lunchtime.
Sure.
Going to have some lunch. Great. GTD sitting in the car park. Doesn't need any fuel. It's absolutely fine.
Ready to go.
Ready to just jump in and go. So we sits there for 45 minutes. Get a message on the app. Says, your car's charged, ready.
Oh, that's quite good. You get the app notification. I like that.
Yeah. So it gives you a countdown.
Okay.
Yeah. So, charge. Great. Let's go. So we gets in at Nottingham, 117 miles or something. We get to Tonnington Services, which is about another 75, 80 miles down the road. Needs charging again.
I'm starting to see why you were so frustrated by the time you called me.
Yeah. So we then pulls in again, does the same exercise again.
Have your tea.
We then had to go in again for another 45 minutes.
I was
going to
say, a second lunch.
But by that point, I'm starting to get annoyed, which I think was when I called you.
Because I think it was.
Yeah. I'm sitting in a perfectly good car that I could just drive home. And by the way, normally when we do these long journeys, from Huddersfield, I just drove straight back. Wouldn't have stopped. Sure. Just drive straight home. So, another 45 minutes. Drink another cup of tea. We have a bag of crisps or whatever we have. We then go from Toddington Services. We just make it back to work. It was 72 miles. We just made it back. Completely empty. So, but my biggest gripe in all, it's not just the inconvenience, the fact that the GTD, we put 50 odd quid worth of diesel. And by the way, still had some diesel left when we come home. Yeah. So I then used the car another two or three times to go home and back, bearing in mind. We then gets the bill for the electric, for the i3. So
this is the bit I love because by the way, when you called, I was so not interested in this chat. Firstly, I was like, this is perfect for the podcast. I don't want to discuss it now. And secondly, your rant went on as long as this, if not longer. And then what I love is you had clearly been so bored, you had done the math. So go on. Now you can be so proud of your numbers. What had you calculated from the bill?
No, it's got worse. So when I spoke to you originally, it was about 9 quid to charge it, each charge.
Yeah, you said, when you called me, it was 18 quid that you'd spent so far, I think.
Roughly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, we used less in the GTD in diesel to get home. and we would have drove straight home with no stops and saved 2 hours, right? There's another surcharge on top of the 18 quid. So it ended up being like 31 quid.
No.
Yes,
a
mate.
A big surcharge.
Another surcharge for using the charge point. I mean,
wow.
Because there's a, I don't know, it's either a maintenance, it's a charge.
Yeah, there's a fee of some kind.
Whatever. So you pay for the electric and there's another charge. So it was like 33 quid. I mean, we nearly went to Huddersfield and back for 33 quid in the Gulf.
Okay, but look, let's try and be with the times here. Let's try and look at this in a positive spin because electric vehicles are coming our way. We can't escape them. Can I be clear and can I be correct in saying that you're attacking the infrastructure here, not the cars?
No, I'm attacking it all. The whole lot. Mate, the car.
But do you not like the car?
No, we've had one before. I mean, it's a great town car.
Yes, so, agreed.
So wait, for you.
Yep.
You live in Central London.
Yeah.
Jinx, past up, not jinx.
I wasn't going to give the postcode. Or your
Well, because Paul Wallace does.
Yeah, he's a
dick. Literally go, I'm going to film coming to your house, and then he puts my postcode into his Google Maps. Anyway, sorry.
Chav that wears vests.
Didn't have to go that personal, but sure.
No.
Onwards.
No, but so for what you would want it for nipping around town, it's perfect.
Yeah, okay? Sure.
But when you want to go out in a car, it's flawed, mate, and as well, so it's more expensive. It's now more expensive to run. It's not cheaper to run. I guess if you charge it from home and it's 8 hours, it's cheaper.
Sure.
But But I'm talking about going on a run.
Well, that's the thing. This is where I had an issue with, for example, with the Taycan. What an amazing car. Brilliant car. Yeah, developed by Porsche. It's fantastic.
Correct.
And I would love one. But fundamentally, the ultimate use for it is around town. Because if you want to go further than that, even with an extended range and super fast chargers, it's still impractical. It's still a headache. You still have to think these things through. The infrastructure is not in place. And at which point, if I'm only using a 130 grand Taycan around town, I might as well get a 50 grand i3, if that's how much i3s cost.
Yeah, they're 30 odd.
Fine.
Yeah,
well, yeah, there you go. Do you know what I mean? Like, so this is the big issue, I think. To try and convert us petrol heads into the way of EV, two things need to happen. Of course, EV range needs to improve. But more importantly, infrastructure. Because of course, in some parts of the world, and in this country, I think there are about two, you have those super speedy chargers. I know you said you were at fast charge points, but they have another level, don't they? We need those everywhere. And we need lots of them. Because petrolhead, people who enjoy driving, or people like you who drive for work, don't just drive their cars around town.
Mate, it's not even petrolheads. So I had a call on the i3 yesterday, a man called. He lived in Brighton, okay. Lewis, lived okay. in Lewis. His offices were in central London, Ladbroke Grove.
Sure.
So he said, I'm not getting a train anymore because of the virus. I'm going to get an electric car.
Great. I think, fundamentally, I get that idea. Like, perfect,
no
fantastic.
No congestion charge.
Wonderful.
And I said, how many miles is your work from home? He said, it's between sort of 65 and 75 if you've got a go diversion. So the i3 is no good. Ooh. It's no good for you. Mm. You're wasting. I mean, I wanted to sell the car, but I mean.
Is this going to call you up in a week and say, you've got to give it back to you?
Yeah, it's no good. Yeah. So it's flawed. And then, so the cars that are good are 100 grand or whatever.
Sure.
So, I mean, just buy yourself a GTD.
Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at. Like, I am excited by electric vehicles. I'm excited by the technology. I'm excited by how they're starting to perform and behave. I think the e-tron looks amazing. Have you seen the e-tron S Sportback? The Audi?
The Audi.
That thing is stunning.
Okay,
what are you going to say?
You look like I'm not going to tell you. I've just left Audi, by the way,
okay,
to come here. So,
sure.
My friend there, yeah, was a sales manager.
I've met him.
Gary.
Yeah.
Very nice
love
man.
Love it, Gary.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you'd get on, he's got the same haircut.
Yeah. Trying to fuck me a TTR.
Yeah, he was, yeah. So I'm not going to tell you what he said about the e-tron because I don't want to damage Audi's sales.
Okay, but who cares? It looks great.
It looks fantastic.
Looks fantastic. So that's what I mean. So I'm excited by the idea of all these EVs. Okay, maybe in real life, then, you know, there's some issues. But anyway, I'm excited by the idea. And I think that, yeah, e-tron S Sportback thing looks amazing. But I couldn't get one because, as I've explained many times before, in central London, there are a few charging points around here, but mm-hmm. not outside my house. Mm-hmm. And I drive too much.
You do.
So I could have a mini electric for town. Great. I was actually half tempted at 1 second, but I don't have anywhere to park right outside my house. And mm-hmm. I don't have to park 3 streets away. Now I've got the puppy to walk back. I have too much camera gear, et cetera, et cetera. So your rant, I kind of get, and I don't think it's misplaced. And I know we're going to have a few EV flag flyers who are going to tell us why we're wrong and why that doesn't matter.
Well,
and
I've proved that it's not wrong, mate, because I couldn't live with an electric car. It's not
you couldn't live with an electric car. Not it me. Cost you more, and it would cost your business because you'd be spending so much time not at the office.
That
charging
was the biggest
up.
Thing.
Yeah,
that's
I remember
I
you said that.
You.
I remember that you said that to me. The thing is, you are theoretically not burning that petrol, that gas, and that fossil fuel. Now, I'm not going to get into the political question of which is more environmentally friendly to make, an electric vehicle or a combustion engine vehicle, because I don't want to get into that argument.
I mean, I think we know what the answer is.
I think we know the answer, but anyway, let's move on. But yeah, so I would be interested to hear why people disagree with you. If you are EV flag fires, fire burners, let us know. Like, feel free to rant below. But I'm with you at the moment massively that this is the issue with EVs, and until it's fixed either by government council level with the infrastructure, I think the manufacturers will get the range sorted in the next
few years. They will.
So it's really the infrastructure. Until that's sorted, you can't expect the world to switch to EV. No. It's just not going to happen.
No, I agree. And when you're a business owner or you run a business or you have a high-powered job. Time's money, mate.
Time is money. And there you go.
We have not got time to be sodding about waiting for 45 minutes for a car to charge that does 80 miles.
I totally agree. Now, I'm just going to pause again because Twiggy's actually destroyed her bed. Twiggy, Twiggy, you're supposed to be being like, you're so well-behaved usually. I've taken her to like 3 video shoots and she just behaves immaculately, sits there quietly, goes to sleep. You know what I did wrong? I fed her at the wrong time. Oh. I fed her just before we started recording because I thought we'd be a few hours, but now she's all jazzed up. Let me just fix her bed. Yeah. That little puppy thing that she plays with, it's called Claude.
Claude. So when you say Claude, I know what you're saying.
Because I was like, go get Claude. Where's Claude?
Come on. Relax. Play.
Anyway, it's not the only rant that you ranted at me with last week.
Oh, really?
There was another one.
Oh, no.
I write these things down. Because a certain new BMW has hit the press reviews, or hit the press. M2CS.
Oh.
Now, I'm going to get in before you just go off on one. I'm actually quite excited by this car. My new, like, BMW revelation, my kind of, like, I'm now what's called hashtag woke to the BMW way of life. I'm so woke to BMW way of life. And when the CS came out, I thought it looked cool. But I remember when it launched, both of us going, like, what the heck is that price tag? Because it fundamentally goes up against a GT4.
Correct.
And when you think GT4 versus M2... I mean, you'd be mad to pick the M2.
Yeah.
I mean, just mad.
Absolutely.
So now that the press are actually getting their hands on them, I'm still intrigued to hear what it's like and if it's any good. But you just want to bury it in the dirt, this car.
No. It's 75 grand, mate.
I know. Ridiculous.
Which is... So that's what a base GT4 is.
Sure.
Before options.
Sure.
I mean, it's not... I mean, is it 30 grand better than an M2 comp?
No, and this is where we disagree over and over again regarding price, because I think I said it to you on the phone. How much was the M4 CS?
How much is it now?
Well, no. Stop. How much was it?
90 odd grand.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't sell them.
No, of course not. It's a pricing structure of BMW. It's a pricing, like, it's a mistake. It's definitely a mistake. And... as I've explained, you would never pick an M2 CS over a GT4 unless you were blind. However, I didn't really like the engine in the 780. Anyway, let's not get distracted. So I get your point, but also I think I understand why BMW put it at that price. If it was 58 grand or 60 grand or perfect. 62 grand, and so you'd be excited then, would you?
The car will be good, mate, because an M2 comp is good, as you experienced the other day. It's a good car.
Bit too serious, but sure.
Bit too serious. So an M2 CS is going to be even more serious.
How boring.
Exactly.
It looks great though.
Yeah. It does look better. Granted, it does look better. Yeah. But I just can't get my head around the... And I know I do bang on about values a lot.
What's your business, mate? I get it.
It's my business. And it's an important factor when you're buying a car, by the way.
It is.
It's the deciding factor on how you buy a car.
Yeah.
So, I mean... It's all right saying take value out. Well, let's put it back in because you can't take it out. Because that's what you need to buy it.
You still got to pay it.
Got to pay.
This car's not free.
No.
And I'll come away from my devil's advocate BMW flag flying position for a second. I agree with you. It is ridiculous. It ruins everything about the car. And it also is BMW taking advantage of the market, I think. They sort of realise if they put out this sexy, spicy, it's not limited, is it?
A limited run.
Okay, fine, whatever.
A limited production run.
Sure. They knew people would pay a premium. They knew they could take advantage of it. And that annoys me because it's a very Jaguar thing to do. Hashtag Project 8.
There's some lot of them.
Don't giggle under your breath like that. I mean, but the problem there is one of the best cars ever made by Jaguar Land Rover, if not the world. Like, not enough people will experience that car because no one wants to buy it. The ones on the used market have been on the used market for a year and their values are all over the shop because, like, anyway, I'm ranting now. Fundamentally, M2CS, I'm with you. It's a piss take. I still like the way the car looks. I still want to have a go in one. I know I'll be disappointed and bored because it will just be a comp that's a little bit harder. And I actually watched Schmee's video when he drove one on track, and it looked pretty boring.
I think it is fundamentally underneath. I think it is a comp.
It's just a comp. I mean, we need to do some more research, but let's wait and see. A lot of press managed to get their hands on it, all embargoed. By the way, if you don't know what an embargo is, we talk about it a lot on YouTube. It's a very old school press term. Essentially, it's what brands or companies or whatever would do to ensure that all publications released at the same time. You would either do it so that you got mass coverage, a big bang moment in the press. So suddenly your product was everywhere and everyone was like, oh my God, what is this product? Or you would do it because logistically it was very hard to arrange all the kind of interviews, and so you wanted fairness amongst all the titles. So for example, if you're doing film PR and you had Brad Pitt for 2 days or, you know, one day in March, one day in June, you got different titles, some titles that are working 2 months ahead, sometimes which are daily newspapers. You have to put an embargo so that no one gets an unfair advantage on the exclusive interview with Brad Pitt. So anyway, it's an old school term. I really hope embargoes die a really quick and painful death because they're ridiculous in the world of social media, but they do still exist. And everyone who's driven an M2CS is under embargo. So we've got to wait a few more.
Until when?
I don't know. No one's told me when the embargo is, but
oh. It's just, when will you get to drive it?
Hopefully later in the summer, I guess. I'm trying to build up my relationship with BMW UK. BMW Germany have been fantastic to me over the last couple of years. BMW UK have also been great. I've lost a bit of contact with them. So I'm trying to do some more work with them, and fingers crossed I'll get my hands on that car.
Fair.
Let's wait and see. Okay, let's change it up a little bit. Going with a quirky car here. Did you see the new Ford Bronco?
No.
Oh, well, what is wrong with you? We don't often talk about cars that don't come to the UK on this podcast.
Oh, that's why then.
But people have been asking for it for a while.
Have they?
Yes, people from America. We have international listeners, mate.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
You know what? Someone said, why don't you... I think it was a Patreon, actually, who said, why don't you talk about cars that aren't available in the UK? I was like, I don't really know many of them. I'll be honest, I'm not really sure, apart from the, you know, Camaros and things.
The Lincoln Navigator. Yeah.
Fantastic knowledge. Ford Bronco, an icon of the US. Obviously, probably most famous for the O.J. Simpson car chase. Okay. Remember the white Ford Bronco when he was running from the cops? You don't know that story? You know who O.J. Simpson is?
I know who O.J. Simpson is, but I've never seen that.
It's not a movie, by the way. You know that, right?
No.
Real life, I'm talking about.
Yeah, but I don't watch telly.
Okay, well, it's the Land Rover Defender / G-Wagon of America. It's the utility, you know, every man's 4x4. It's taken on various sort of iterations over the years, and they've brought it back now, and it looks fantastic. It killed the internet, basically.
Okay.
It came out in America. But I think worldwide, because people saw it, and they've done an amazing job at harking back to the original 60s Bronco.
Are you going
to
do making it look
modern? Yeah, I'm going to do B-roll. Do you want to see it?
I'd love to.
Okay, because I thought you might.
Because I haven't got any idea
what I'm talking about. But yes, because we can hark on more and more about new Defender, by the way, which I'm driving tomorrow.
Ah!
Exclusive for Behind the Glass listeners, a Defender video is coming.
You will think exactly the same as me.
I'm sure I will, but I'm intrigued. Anyway, we can hark on about how that kind of, you know, looks nothing like an actual Defender. That is the Bronco.
That looks a bit like that.
Bronco?
No. What's that?
The Ineos Grenadier.
Yes.
Yeah, sort of. I'm not completely against you there, but it looks like the Bronco. If you saw the original Bronco, which I'm now going to bring up, it is definitely old Bronco made new.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I mean, the dog can choke.
The dog is an absolute nightmare today. Oh, this is my first time of being like, she's a nightmare.
Oh, I know that one.
There you go. So I've just showed Tony a picture of the 1960s Bronco.
That was in Knight Rider, that car.
Good shout.
No, I don't even know what Knight Rider is, do you?
Kit.
Yeah.
Hello, David. Hello, Michael. What was the guy called?
Michael,
there you go. Anyway, so yeah, Bronco I think is really cool. Unfortunately, we're not supposed to be getting it in Europe. I think Clive Sutton, that guy who imports all the Mustangs and things like that, has said that he's going to try and bring some over. The thing I can't understand is the size, because American trucks and SUVs have been getting so ludicrously huge over the years. I worry that will be like Raptor, F-150 Raptor massive.
Mate, that's cars in general. Do you know, I was behind a little Audi A1 the other day. It's like an old shape A3. Dude, they're huge.
Everything is so big.
I know.
You know what the piece I wanted to do was 992 Turbo S with 993 Turbo S? You could fit a 993 Turbo S in the boot of a 992 Turbo S. My good Lord. Like, things are just getting huge. It's a bit out of control. And new Defender, just to hark on about that again. What a massive car. I've seen a few of them rolling around London now. They're ginormous.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, well, that was our kind of catch up on some of the news of the last week. But as I say, if you're not a patron, if you're not getting this kind of real time, it would have been the news of a few weeks ago. So, be really old news.
Oh.
Probably the M2CS embargo's lifted. The Bronco's coming to the UK. My 911's back, available at Gravelwood Castle. Now, but look, let's get into the meat of today's episode, which is kind of like a mini Porsche special. I've repeated over and over again, I don't really want to allow you a full Porsche special episode like we've done with Lamborghini and Ferrari, because I think it would just be so boring. You'd just be gone for half an hour. I use the best of cars in the world, fantastic. But anyway, I'm actually glad
because
you'd bore yourself. I think.
I'd bore myself, yeah.
But I'm going to give you half an episode and I'm going to engage with you on it.
No, I'd rather you engage with it because okay. I could just literally just rattle on.
Oh, I know, it's so bad. So look, let's go back. We did touch on this a little bit when you collected your GT3 RS from Porsche Guildford. Mm-hmm. And we did the special episode with the live audience, which we're hoping to do more of at some point in the future. So we know a bit of your story, but just remind people, why did your sort of Porsche story begin?
Well, when I was a kid, my cousin had one.
Okay.
And I just always liked him. He had a 996 Turbo.
Ooh, hello. Yeah. Your cousin was doing all right, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He had a good job in the city.
Clearly.
He was a lot older than me, by the way. And it was really from then on, and I thought, oh, really?
They're all right.
Yeah, I'd like a Porsche. And probably a bit younger, actually. But that's when I really first started looking up to Porsches, and I'm going to buy one of them one day, all that jazz, and I did.
Oi, oi. Hashtag goals.
And I bought a few, and I've owned more Porsches probably than I have any other car.
I say, bought a few. Obviously, a lot of crossover with your business here, because you do have a ton of Porsches coming and going.
For sure.
Et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But you have had, I mean, since I've known you, from GT4s to Turbos to GT3, GT3 RS, et cetera, flying through them. I mean, have you had any Panameras ever?
Yes.
You have?
Yes.
Okay. New shape?
No. I had an old shape car. But I don't get loads of them. I did buy one for myself for a while.
But I was going to say, because I've seen you with Macans and Cayennes and things like that, but I've never seen you with the Panameras.
Yeah. I mean, Guildford lent me a Turbo S.
The hybrid one?
The shooting brake thing.
Yeah.
When they first come out, flipping hell, what a car that was. It was 140 grand.
That's my low key dream family daily driver is the Turbo SE hybrid thing, Panamera, Gran Turismo, shooting brake. Yeah, Gran Turismo, you know, yeah. The full, just tick yeah. all the boxes.
And it looks so good, that car.
So
as well.
Good. And yeah. if you do it in a subtle spec, no one really cares.
No, that's right. Yeah, it just wafts along, yeah.
So what was your first Porsche then? Because we've talked about the fact you've had about 700. Do you remember what your first one you bought was for yourself?
I think it was a 996 C4S or C2S.
Okay.
And I remember it was a Tiptronic thing.
Sure. Something which
terrible.
Just awful. Something awful.
But at the time...
Sorry.
Is that normal?
Now,
so he took the thing.
Twiggy's now picked up her water bowl and spilt water all over the floor.
Drowned a toy.
Go on. So yeah, you had 996 coupe.
Not coupe, yeah.
Because I know you had a weird moment with cabriolets in your life. That was odd.
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah, that was
very bizarre.
But yeah, coupe. The thing is, mate, I've had so many. I can't remember the...
Don't you have to show off, mate.
No. Like... I've
just had so many Porsches.
Yeah, well, I have.
You have, actually. I mean, since I've known you, as I say. What about that 997.2 GT3 you had? You don't even remember that. It was white with the heavy clutch. Tony just calls me and goes, oh, mate, I bought a GT3. Oh, and you've already got a GT3, mate. He goes, no, I bought another one. I bought an old one.
That I didn't ever drive.
No, you didn't.
I never drove it.
You were like, what a disaster.
Did you drive that
car? Yeah, I drove it. I came to the video and drove it. Awesome sound. Incredible sound. Nice analog-ishy feel, but really heavy clutch pedal.
Really heavy clutch pedal. And older Porsches, people will know this, that own them, mm-hmm. were so bad for understeer. They literally just go straight. but obviously the new cars have been dialed out.
And with so many other cars, I think with Porsche, like Ferrari, people really hark on about previous generations. Oh, the car you want's the 996 GT2. But realistically, the 991 GT2 is a much better car. Like, you know what I mean? So it's that kind of thing where that 997.2 GT3 was amazing. Looked great. Sounded the bomb.
Yeah.
But the 991 GT3 is just a miles better car.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Porsches have had their problems down the years, obviously, with the 997 and the same generation Boxster and Cayman with the ball scoring, and they had terrible engine problems. But Porsche really arrived, I think, to the market properly as a proper engineered car when the PDK came out.
Really?
I think
so. Oh, I disagree with you then.
I think Porsche
are Porsche.
Yeah, no. But what I'm saying is that they'd have their problems back then, you know, they'd have their engine problems and stuff, and now I mean, they absolutely smash it now. And as well, you know, people... And it's weird because when I first all met all you social media lads, none of you liked Porsches.
Oh, all hated Porsches.
Every single one
of
you.
Yeah. I've got a video saying why I never really liked Porsches.
Yeah. But you've all either owned one and now love them, or all experience. And that's the thing with Porsche as well. The people that knock them in general are the people that have never owned them mm-hmm. or never really experienced mm-hmm. them. It's a weird... They have a weird following and a weird...
It's a cult. It's a cult.
Yeah.
And so, firstly, I'm just going to get in that I'd really disagree with what you're saying about them turning up on the scene in terms of engineering. Because I think what I would agree with you on is that in recent years, maybe the last 10 years, they've gone from strength to strength to strength, where they're now this like proper big dick player. But Porsche are Porsche. And I think even from the 50s, like they've always been... Pretty
in big trouble, mate. I mean, they as a brand until Volkswagen really got hold of them, they didn't really make very good cars, mate. Like in terms of, you know, the build for a German manufacturer, the engines weren't that great, and they would, you know, they'd constantly overheat and stuff. And I mean, the 996 wasn't really a great car, really. To be honest, I mean, it's hard because the first. Water-cooled car,
sure,
obviously. So, but yeah, I think Porsche really arrived in the late 2000s when they, you know, these are our cars. They're bulletproof. They're properly made. I mean, put together, they've always been put together properly, but they always had their mechanical issues, and now they just smash it.
Yeah, and I think Macan and Cayenne took them to a whole different stratosphere. I mean, we know that that's the majority of their sales these days.
Sure.
And I think that's what elevated the company. But yes, you're so right in the sense that I, like so many others, especially in the YouTube community, but in the world, really knocked Porsche until I had a go in one. The first time I ever considered potentially buying a Porsche was it 4C? No, it wasn't F-Type. It must have been 4C time. I went to look at a 981 Cayman S. Could have been a GTS, but I find it unlikely because there would have been big money. So let's say it was an S. Dark blue, black details at, what's the Porsche on the A4? Must be, not Chiswick or, you know, the one that is coming
on
the
West
A4.
London.
West London, there you go. So anyway, went to see that car. It was amazing. And that was the only real time that I was like, ooh, you know, I'll get myself a Porsche.
How old was that? Was that a 981?
A 981, 981, right. Naturally aspirated S. Really, really nice car. But it was more than the 4C, and the 4C was quirky. And anyway, so that's the route I went. And then I was always knocking Porsche because I didn't really get it. I think if you're not into Porsche, you know, all the C4S, S turbo, 991, 997, you're like, well, shut up, mate. It's just a 911. Yeah. Like, who cares? Yeah. And you don't really get it. And then I was spoiled because my first real experience of Porsches that I should pay attention to was a 2.7 RS and Mr. JWW's GT3, 991.1 GT3 in Monaco. And I was like, right, now I'm starting to see the appeal.
I understand, yeah.
And I fell off a big cliff on that sense and then kind of fell head over heels in love.
Yeah.
Which started with me for the 718 Cayman S, 911 Carrera T, and let's see what the future holds.
Yeah.
But yeah, so once you're in, I think it's as much the community, but the consistency across the range. Because there's something about Porsche, once you've bought into the idea of them, which is that they're not necessarily the most thrilling, the most exciting, they're just the most capable. Every Porsche you get into, you can find those elements. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a 70s Porsche or an 80s Porsche or a noughties Porsche, they all tick those boxes. When I drove a 959, I was like, this is very, very dull in comparison to what I was hoping and expecting. But it was a Porsche.
Compared to an F40 or something.
Well, that's what I was doing. I was comparing it against F40. Okay, and just, you know, dull as dishwater.
Yeah.
But it was very Porsche and it was recognizable as Porsche. And so I think fundamentally, that's where they have a great success. They haven't changed their identity that much over the years. And obviously the shape of the 911. But that's their beauty. And you can get someone who's got a relatively, you know, maybe a few years ago, they bought a 20 grand 993. And they're as in love with the brand, as enthusiastic as someone who's bought a brand new 991 GT3.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I agree.
Now, let's talk a bit about values. Because I actually think today, on the modern market, modern used market, the safest place to put your money is in pretty much any modern Porsche.
Yeah, so again, I think that probably changed. When do I think that probably changed? When the 981 Boxster and Cayman come out.
Okay.
And I remember driving one of them cars. I think it was a Boxster, 981 Boxster S. And there was always the poor man's Porsche, the Boxster and the Cayman. When I drove it, I thought, flipping hell, this is better than the 911. This is really, 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 this is a
sounded the bomb.
Yes, this is a proper Porsche. This isn't a substitute car. This is a real good car. And obviously values have reflected that.
Of course.
You know, them Boxsters and them. I mean, I just sold a 981 Cayman S.
I remember you saying, real nice spec, huh?
A lovely spec car with 30,000 miles on it for 38 grand. I mean, that car would have been 50 new.
Well, we spoke about this the other day because there are some, I mean, ridiculous things out there. 991.1, the naturally aspirated GTS, still 90 grand, basically. 997 GTS, which everyone says is a real sweet spot in old school Porsche, especially if you can find a manual. I mean, they're still 65, sometimes 70 grand if it's a manual.
Yeah.
You're right, 981 Cayman S, Cayman GTS, big, big money.
Yeah.
Cayman R, which was a quirky little car.
Was, yeah.
They're basically list. I mean, 10 years later.
But they didn't make loads of them then. The problem, it's not a problem with Porsche, is that what they'd done a few years ago, they would really, production wouldn't be very high. But what they've done now is because they're so popular, they just keep churning cars out.
Keep making them.
So instead of the, say, the dealers having the money, Paul should just keep making the cars and they've had the money. And I don't blame them because they're a business.
Of course.
So that's why
the demand's there. Make the cars.
Demand's there. Which is why they always make a shed load of GT cars. Okay, people moan that they don't get them. But they do make a lot more of them. But the reason why is that they're in so much demand is because they're cheap.
Well, yes, value, great value for money. They're not cheap.
No, but in comparison.
You rich, rich bugger.
No, in comparison.
Cheap. Yeah, they're good value for money in comparison to their rivals.
And they work.
Oh, they're so cheap.
And they're better in, yeah. And they're better engineered.
I could buy 10 tomorrow.
Well, I mean, I could.
Oh, come on. Yeah, where's your gold Rolex? You're not wearing that today, are you?
No, it's in here somewhere.
But you're right. I mean, especially when you start to see what they can achieve and what they can do. And we had that GT2 RS Pista argument a few weeks ago.
But didn't end well for you.
No. Except Turbo S, except modern day Turbo S, which still you could compare against 720S or Ferrari F8 Tributo in terms of performance. It's still cheaper, arguably. You know, the GT products especially, but then the more standard range, because they haven't got a GTS 992 yet, have they? But, you know, that kind of car is always... you know, 30-40 grand less than its rivals, if not more.
Yeah, but it's weird because as time's gone on, I mean, a 997 Carrera S was new, was 65 grand.
Sure.
A 992 Carrera S now is nearly double the price.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then let's get into the negative quickly, because Porsche, like every other person in the world, has risen with the market, inflation, all these different elements. But, you know, people are prepared to pay a lot more for their cars these days. Mm. And that's what's happened. But they've also fallen into the trap where that demand for the limited cars, that demand for the GT products, as they've got better, as Porsche's kind of social media credibility and, you know, I don't know what else you'd call it, hype has grown. The sort of games that they play are similar to Ferrari. In the sense where, oh, sir, of course you can have a GT3, but wouldn't you love this lovely Panamera first?
Or you've got to buy a Macan, or you've got to buy a 911.
Got to play the game now, right?
Correct.
Which I think a lot of the, you know, the sort of original Porsche community, or maybe people in general, have been very frustrated by, because it wasn't always the case.
It was not, no.
And so it's been a quite recent thing, maybe since 991.1 GT3? You tell me if I'm wrong, that they've suddenly had this mentality of maybe it's so much demand, or they've known that they've been able to control it in that way. But now it feels like you have to really play the game to qualify for one of these special cars.
Yeah, I think they've obviously looked at the other manufacturers that do it, Ferrari especially, and thought, well, if they can do it, we'll do it. But we make a lot more cars than them. So it's easier for us to do it, essentially. So... And the price range of our cars, we just do it on a cheaper scale, essentially. So you can buy a Macan or you can buy a Boxster, because they are a lot of money, but it's a lot cheaper to play the Porsche game than it is to play the Ferrari game.
Fair, yeah, because you have to buy a Portofino or a Lusso to get into your Pista. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. So I understand why they do it. It's just sometimes it's a little bit unfair how some customers... are treated in terms of what do I have to do to get this special car?
Absolutely. Because, yeah, I think, especially if you've been a long-term customer, things like Speedster and GT2 RS, 918, etc., I think people got, well, and Touring, GT3, a lot of people got upset with how they got treated because they felt like they were loyal customers or they'd bought certain cars and suddenly they were being told, oh, no, well, actually, Mr. Bob down there has had 15 Macans from us, so he's getting a slot instead.
Yeah. What I found is, or what I always found, it's always the same people that get the special cars, so they don't get shared around too much. So the dealerships will have their special big hitter customers. They've all got their big hitter customers and they get all the cars. They get everything. So, yeah, they get all the GT stuff. And it, like, share it around a bit. Like, you make enough cars, share it around a bit for everyone.
And I don't care who you are. You don't need a GT3 RS, a GT3 RS YSAC, a GT2 RS YSAC, a 9... You know, you don't need them all.
Nope.
You don't.
Things are going to be changing in a minute because I think there'll be... Well, no, mate, because the economic climate of the country,
Good point.
People are not... You know, they're going to go back to how they were before and begging people to buy cars.
Yeah.
No, that's what's going to happen.
I've been offered 718 GT4s by 3 different Porsche dealerships.
Of course you have.
Yeah, because they are really struggling to sell those cars.
They can't sell them, yeah.
Can't sell those cars. So what would you say, and I'll get in on this as well, to people who claim that Porsches are just a bit boring?
Go and buy one.
Okay, but no, because not everyone's... If you think a Porsche is boring, why are you going to buy one?
But that's what everyone thinks before they go and own one, before they buy one. They just think they're boring. And to be fair, they have, like all modern cars, they have been dialed out a bit. I mean, you know, we've had this conversation before. The 992 is just a very good sports car. There's nothing better than it, by the way. It's the best sports car, but it just doesn't give you that thrill. If you want that thrill, you've got to buy a GT car because that's the only car that's still got it in. Even that 911 Turbo S, that new car, it's the fastest thing on the road, probably barring a 720S. But...
Just left me a bit cold.
Who cares?
It's just that. Like, it's just really quick and really good. That's it.
But that's what Turbo S's have always been about.
Yeah, and that's nothing bad. And this is the thing with Porsche is that's what you have to accept and almost embrace about. I'm talking about really 911s here because I think it's the easiest generalization to make. Is that they are great at being pretty boring. You don't buy a Porsche to turn up outside the club. You don't buy a Porsche to rev the crap out of it. You don't buy a Porsche to wrap it chrome pink. You buy a Porsche to trundle around in all day, every day, in your nice sports car with your nice comfy seats, still feeling pretty good about yourself that you've gone and bought a 911. And then at the weekend, you can take it and give it a proper blast. Or if on the way to work, you happen upon a good road, off you go. You can take it on track. It will work. And it will work driving it there on track and driving it back.
Drive it home.
Drive it home. Maintenance is relatively low key these days.
100, yes.
20,000 miles, services and whatever. You know.
Cheaper than a C63.
Yeah. So that once you kind of embrace that and that side of the Porsche life, that's what you kind of start to enjoy. The fact that you've got this tool in your shed or outside your home or whatever that can be used for every occasion and it's always a 911 sports car.
Correct. And it's a little bit boring because it's good at everything.
Yes, it ticks all the boxes. And I was quite critical about the 720S over the years because I thought it was trying to tick too many boxes. And I think the wrong box it tried to tick with of the others was that it was a supercar, an all-out supercar. Looked insane, madly. But then it was trying to be as comfortable and as usable as a 911. Mm. They should have sacrificed some of that usability to make it a supercar because that's the way it looked. It needed to be thrilling and crazy and mad or needed to be a bit more thrilling, crazy and mad. The 911, I say, you just kind of go, I don't have to be like giggling like a child every time I get in it because it's just so good.
It just does everything.
It just does everything. And that's my kind of pitch to somebody. I think there are great Porsches in the range. We talked about the Panamera, Cayman. I think Boxers have their place.
Of course they do.
So fantastic cars. I've never been a big fan of Cayenne and Macan, but you know, each to their own. But that's my thing. If you getting in a 911, don't buy it if you're coming out of a Huracan or you've always been a fan of, I don't know what else I'm trying to think of, but buy it if you want a car that's just going to do everything.
Yeah. And yeah, step up into it in terms of if you've had Audi, BMW, Mercedes, and you want to step up into a proper sports car, the best sports car you can buy. And rightly so, because we've been making it for 40 years. I mean, yeah, of course
it's
good.
They better be good at it.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. They just make it that little bit better all the time. Then, yeah, buy yourself a bit. Yeah, don't come down because you'll think, oh, this is boring, it's crap. But fundamentally as well, I know I harp on about how good Porsches are. I mean, they do have their problems, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. They do have their glitches, but of course they do. They make 250,000 cars a year.
Of course.
Of course they're going to have their problems. And you know, some people will be shouting at me and saying, oh, I had a new 911, it had electrical faults and it's had oil leaks and stuff. That's a thing on the 992, by the way. They suffer with oil leaks or oil cooler or something. But they will deal with it, Porsche. And I'll tell you what Porsche do as well. Same as Ferrari and Lamborghini as well, to an extent. If you have a problem with your car, which all these other manufacturers don't do, BMW and Mercedes and Audi are really bad customer service-wise in terms of you've got a problem. So even out of warranty, Porsche sort it for you. So in goodwill claims and stuff like that, they're so good at that.
Customer service, customer care.
Yeah. And that's what you pay your money for as well. You pay for an experience when you're buying the car because people like that.
Yeah, so of course. When you join the family. the Porsche family. It does feel that way.
It does feel that way. Yeah. And you're always friendly with the people that work in the dealerships, and you know they'll call you up, and it's not like buying the other traditional German cars where you're just a number and they take your money and it's goodbye, see you later. Porsche are still special.
It feels premium. You feel well looked after. Yes. You feel like you've bought something expensive.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it is a tough one because there are definitely a lot of Porsche haters and there's definitely a lot of people who don't get them. And I think it's a very good point that you say you should always try and step up into a Porsche rather than stepping sideways or down, because that's when you risk a little bit of disappointment. As a man who has owned 700, is there one car out there, you know, if you're a big time collector, you know, you would just go, oh, you know what, I'd like to have one of those. I mean, forever it was the 2RS, but I feel like your love affair with the 3RS has kind of weaned you away from that car. But anything else, you know, historic, like, are you a Carrera GT man?
Not really.
I know you don't really. 918?
918.
You'd be on a bit of a 918. 911R? No.
No.
Speedster?
I don't know.
Really?
No way.
So when I did the episode with Ed Lovett last week.
He's got one.
He's got one at the moment and he really loves it.
Yeah. No. It'll be a great car because it's a GT car and it's got no roof. So no doubt it's a good car, but it's nearly 300 grand, mate.
Yeah. Not for you.
Well, I'm lucky that I own a GT3 RS, so.
But as I say, money, no object. You just won
918.
918 would be the route you go.
100%.
Yeah. No, fair enough.
Yeah.
I think that's still an undervalued, what am I trying to think of?
Undervalued car.
Yeah, undervalued car.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I mean, that my memories of driving that in New Zealand, just mind-blowing.
And in the real world, out of them three hypercars, it's the fastest one as well, by the way.
Oh, no, jog on.
What?
Not a chance, mate. Fastest one where?
Down to Tesco. In the real world?
What do you mean in the real world? No, it's not.
So what's faster then?
P1 and LAF.
No!
The other two.
Well, you can't get the power down, you end up in a wall.
No, LAF will always be the quickest, because hashtag Ferrari.
Because it's Ferrari. Although the P1's probably the fastest.
Probably do a quicker lap time, but the LAF Ferrari is faster, even if the lap times don't agree. But no way in the 918 is the quickest. Like, no chance.
I think it would be in the real world.
No, it's got those heavy batteries and things.
They've all got heavy batteries.
No, but the 918s are super heavy. We're going to leave it there because that could be a whole other episode. Maybe that's it. Holy trio. Which one's the best? Oh, God. I dare not get into it. But anyway, guys, I hope you've enjoyed listening. Twiggy, you've been an absolute terror this episode. I was really trying to show off having you on the podcast and you pooped. You've eaten things. You've spilt the water. But it's been a pleasure having you here. And it's been a pleasure having all of you listen to us. If you are a patron, we love you. Thank you so much for supporting this podcast. We do have some big, exciting things happening behind the scenes already, thanks to your support. If you're interested in getting behind the podcast by doing so, just visit patreon.com/behindtheglass. And otherwise, subscribe. Keep following us.
Please.
Yeah, that's about it, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Okay, adios. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.